paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, fourth and final hour here live on a Tuesday edition of the show. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Marquise Munson with you. Good to have you in. The big finish is coming up at 9:45, but right now, take a little detour from the world of sports, and we welcome in Trey Crowder, comedian from Knoxville, Tennessee, diehard Vols fan, a big Preds fan, and he joins us here on Morning Drive. Trey, good morning. How are you, bud?
Hey, guys. Morning. Thanks for having me.
So, first and foremost, just, and again, Salina is a town up near the border. You can tell everybody where that is if you want. Trey, my first question is just how you feeling after Saturday against the Gators?
Oh, you know, the usual, racked with despair, utterly bereft of hope, that type of thing. Just the, you know, typical week following a Vols football game, yeah. Yeah, Salina's up north of Cookeville, about 40 miles north of Cookeville, Del Hollow Lake area up there.
You can follow Trey Crowder at Trey Crowder on Twitter, the website treycrowder.com. So does it help to laugh about how bad they've been for the last decade or so, or do you just avoid it as a comedian?
I mean, I don't talk about it on stage too much, only because I have found, you know, people think that, like, you can't joke about, like, religion and politics and stuff, in the South particularly, but if you don't want to completely derail a show in the South, I don't care where you are, then don't bring up college football, like, no matter what you have to say about it, because It immediately devolves into people just yelling out their, you know, their teams and schools and stuff, and, you know, it gets bad fast. And even if you're outside the South, I have found, it, I don't care if you're in Midtown Manhattan, somebody is going to yell Roll Tide. Like, they just materialize as if summoned by Nick Saban blood magic just right there in Gotham Comedy Club and start, you know, hollering about the tide at you. So I don't talk about it too much, but believe me and my buddies, we laugh plenty because, you know, laugh to keep from crying. That's what they say.
Trey Crowder joining us here. Coming to Nashville December 19th to the 22nd. Tickets are online right now. Wellreadcomedy.com is where you can get those. Again, December 19th through the 22nd. So you're telling me that, Trey, you can go after religion and politics and all these really complicated, divisive issues way before you can go after college football?
Well, I mean, again, just in terms of, like, guaranteeing that you lose control of the crowd, yes, absolutely, 100%. You are going to derail things if you bring up college football. If you, you know, they'll allow you to, they'll hear you out on the other things at least. And then, you know, if you go in a direction they don't like, then that can also really screw things up for you. But if it's college football, guaranteed, the minute it comes out your mouth, people are going to start flipping out.
Now, Trey, there's a lot of people walking around this face of the earth thinking they're funny. Hell, we think we're funny on this show, but more than likely, we're not.
No, we're not. We're not funny.
Exactly. But how does one, you know, get into the comedy business? Because, you know, hey, you might be funny to your friends, but being funny to a larger audience is totally different.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's wild how much that's changed even in, you know, since I've been doing comedy, which is like 9 years now. Mm-hmm. But even when I started in 2010, as far as I was aware, pretty much the only way to get into it was to find a comedy club or some kind of, you know, live entertainment venue near you that does an open mic and then just go and do it and see how it goes. And spoiler, it's probably going to go pretty bad the first few times. So be prepared for that. But I mean, nowadays, you know, you can do stuff on the internet. You can just holler at your phone for a while and give that a shot. I mean, I did that too, so I've tried both. But at the end of the day, the only way to get into it and find out if you're, you know, actually funny or not is to give it a shot in front of people who, you know, aren't your buddies.
So take us through the evolution of how you got there, because I've got questions about the whole PC culture and how we can't laugh at ourselves anymore. I think there's some bigger questions there. But just you obviously have a certain ideology about the world and how you view it. But like many of us in Tennessee, it doesn't always align with our neighbors or our friends or even our family. How did you sort of come to the realization of what you were going to be as a comedian? How did you land on the liberal redneck, for example?
Well, I've been a big comedy fan and pretty much my whole life. I first started wanting to do stand up when I was 12 years old when Chris Rock's Bigger and Blacker came out on HBO in 1998. That was the thing that made me like actually want to do it one day. And so then I started thinking about it from that perspective, and it seemed to me that there were plenty of comedians who were from the South. But they were normally one of two things, white comedians from the South specifically. And they either dropped the accent entirely and didn't even talk about being from the South, and they might as well have been from, you know, Pennsylvania or wherever. Or it was full-bore cable guy stuff, you know, blue-collar comedy tour type of thing. It was like you had to be one or the other. And I just thought the whole time that I wanted to try, you know, a different approach, meaning fully embrace the, you know, being from the rural South part of it, but not talk about the types of things that you expect those comedians to talk about. So I kind of had that in my head before I ever even went on stage for the first time, honestly.
Trey, you brought up Chris Rock, and I know there's a difference between stand-up comedy and sketch comedy and things like that. Just curious, as a guy who's grown up and you're now been a comedian for a decade, what do you think of the current state of Saturday Night Live and their comedy?
I mean, I do worry about us overcorrecting for sure with the PC culture thing and all of that, but I also think that I still want to believe in my heart as a comedian that the golden rule in that arena still applies, which is and always has been, if it is genuinely funny, then you can get away with it. I'm not saying you won't upset some people. But if it's funny and clever enough, if it actually works and is undeniable in that way, then I still think even today that you can do it and get away with it. And, you know, the thing with the guy on Saturday Night Live, he was basically just, you know, he was in the middle of kind of a comedic riff, but the thing that really upset people was mostly him just screaming a racial slur repeatedly. You know, it wasn't like a structured joke he was doing. So I still think if you go about it, you know, smartly, that you could still get away with it even today. But, I mean, yeah, the lines are drawn a little more clearly and all over the place now more than they ever have been. But that's just the way it is.
Trey Crowder joining us here again, coming to Nashville December 19th to the 22nd. WellReadComedy.com is the website. You can buy tickets there. TreyCrowder.com is also the website. I'd like to go a little bit deeper into that in general, Trey, just because, you know, we recently all just watched the Sticks and Stones document or performance from Dave Chappelle, and it feels like he's going back to his roots a little bit of just saying, you know what, I'm going to try to go after everybody equally. I'm a huge South Park fan because they go after everybody equally, make fun of everything equally. More importantly, they do it in a very smart and really genius, amazing sort of way. Is that really all that matters for you when you decide on if a joke is too much or not? It's just, is it well executed? Is it funny? And if it passes that test, that's all I care about? Or is there ever a moment where you go, man, maybe I've got to consider my audience or change what I do? Or just kind of explain that process.
I mean, yes, you know, I'd like to say that it's the former. It's like you said, all that matters is that, you know, is it funny enough? Do I believe in it? Because you brought up South Park. That's where I first heard, you know, they had the rule either all of it is okay or none of it is, which I pretty much agree with that philosophically. So, but I mean, at the same time, I feel like most comedians, you know, you got to read the room. That's the thing, regardless of what type of room it is. I'm not saying that you just completely compromise the type of comedian that you are, but I'd be lying if I said there wasn't some element of, you know, trying to know your audience a little bit and not trying to just baldly provoke them. But I mean, I came up as a stand-up comedian in the South doing all kinds of, you know, comedy clubs, but also very redneck, like biker bars, stuff like that, joking about the Bible and that sort of thing. I mean, I was, you know, in the trenches of that for a while, and I never got, you know, I never had a hockey player give me what fur in Knoxville or anything over it. Like, I made it out of there okay. So I still think that you can do it as long as you just, you know, be smart about how you go about it, I guess.
Trey, we know the issues with the Vols from a football perspective in Knoxville, but the Predators here in Nashville, pretty good team. I hear you're kind of a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I still don't know anything about how, like, I watch it just like the same way that my six-year-old watches it. You know what I mean? Like, except I get more excited than he does. I have no idea what's going on for the most part. I know the general goal of the game, but that's about it. But, yeah, like a lot of other Tennesseans, you know, the Predators got good, and it got me into it. I've been to some Preds games, and the atmosphere is amazing. And I do like watching it, even though I still am far from being able to, like, speak intelligently on the subject. But, yeah, I mean, I'm all about it. You know, the Titans, not so much at the moment. But, yeah, go Preds.
Trey Crowder here. Thanks for joining us, man. December 19th through the 22nd here in Nashville. WellReadComedy.com is a website. Trey Crowder, thank you for joining us, my man. We'll get you to a Preds game. If you're in town, we'll have you on the show again, and we'll get you to a Preds game, my man.
I would love that. Thank you, guys.
You
absolutely
got it.
Thank you, Trey.
Thanks, Trey.
All right.
Follow him on Twitter at Trey Crowder.
I think he hit on something really important there at the end that I think is important for everybody to hear, that as long as you just are respectful to people and you sort of do what you're supposed to do, he's like, man, I've never – he's like, I'm on the front line of this sort of ideological comedic warfare, and, like, I still walk out of every building okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people are better than we give them credit for. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I've just always been of the belief that if you go to a comedy show, I mean, you got to almost – forget the fact that you're going to get offended. You might hear something you don't like, but that's
right.
That's the jux of the whole thing.
Well, he said, he's like, I'm telling Bible jokes at a biker bar in small towns in the South. Like, if those folks are still laughing at the joke, why can't we all laugh at those kind of jokes? Like, I just, again, yeah. There's, as long as you're done, what I'm always offended by is not funny. Like, if I hear a joke that's not funny and it's offensive, then I'm like, oh, that joke could be, that's not a funny joke. Like, yeah. You need to get a better writer.
All right, coming up next, we did a lot of college football on the show yesterday because of the Vols and Gators, Vandy, LSU, and the SEC, but we forgot to really dig into one individual. We'll do that when we come back. Thank you very much, Jeff. It is Morning Drive here on a Tuesday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Big finish coming up at 9:45 this morning, but let's get to one man that we did not get a chance to discuss on yesterday's show from the college world. Because we did a ton yesterday on the Vols and the Gators. And I can't let you off the hook. So we got to get to Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, you're talking about me?
Yeah, we got to get to...
Let me get my popcorn first.
The Wisconsin-Michigan debacle from Saturday. Just because Jim Harbaugh is a national talking point. So I just saw this tweet. This was from Kyle Rowland, who really does a good job documenting the failures of Harbaugh. So Michigan under Jim Harbaugh now, 0-4 against Ohio State. 1-9 against top 10 opponents, 0-7 as an underdog, 1-6 on the road against ranked opponents, and 5 losses by at least 21 points, including 3 of the last 5 games. I'm almost beyond the point that Jim Harbaugh's overrated. I don't know where I would actually rate the guy currently in college football.
That's my issue with the
quote. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, that's my issue with the overrated chance. I don't think he's rated as one of the top 5 or 8 coaches in America. I don't think he's thought of that way. He's paid that way, and that's a different story. But the people who pay him feel very differently than the media. The people who pay him still love him. The people who pay him, there's no, like, this hot seat conversation is comical. The administration at Michigan is not interested in moving on from Jim Harbaugh. In fact, Jim Harbaugh is probably more likely to leave Michigan on his own than it is. Than he is to get fired. They are not moving on him at any point. Now, they lose to Ohio State at the end of the year. He goes 0-5. That seat and that pressure ratchets up a little bit. I think there's a greater conversation about what Michigan should be viewed. I think Michigan fans view themselves as a top 5 program, and they're just not. It's like Tennessee. Tennessee is not a top 5 or 10 program, but they're like number 12. Michigan's more like number 13 or 14. They're just not a top 5 program like people kind of perceive them to be in the 90s. You know, they've won one national title in 60 years. It's just not a program that consistently dominates like it used to. So I think that's part of this equation. I think Jim Harbaugh's a pretty good coach.
Well, what do you think it is, though, that separates
on Saturday
Michigan from Ohio State? As far as for the last 50 years, one national championship. I mean, if they're neck-and-neck rivals in the conference, why is it Ohio State's recession-proof? And yet, is it...
Ohio State has better players routinely. They've hired better coaches.
Is it admission standards at Michigan a little higher?
Some of that. I also think, and Derek, you can speak to this, the fan base is a fairly quiet 100,000-seat stadium. It is not a rabid LSU-style, you know, even the Swamp or Alabama. Like, there is a... this is going to sound weird. There's like a white collar, like relaxed vibe from Michigan fans. It's not this rabid, bloodthirsty type of passion that you have at like LSU or Penn State or Ohio State. Ohio State is willing to do more to win than Michigan. I think that's what it comes down to.
I've played in some loud stadiums, and Michigan wasn't one of them.
See, there you go.
You know, Penn State, Ohio State, Wisconsin.
Yeah,
you know, stadiums like that that were just, you know, Iowa was just loud.
And that's back when Michigan was really good in
exactly.
the mid-90s.
And, you know, it's the problem with Michigan is they have not they sort of have this Les Miles problem. They haven't stepped into the 21st century. In regards to offenses and how they still want to play hard-nosed, which is great. They still want to play hard-nosed defense and run the football. They'll throw it around occasionally, but they tried it with Rodriguez.
Yeah, with the zone read.
And they tried to bring in the players and try to this fast-paced offense, but they didn't have a defense to match it.
Didn't work.
So it didn't work. So they figured, we got to bring in, you know, Jim Harbaugh and change things up. Well...
with Brady Hoke mixed
yeah.
in.
Well, it works, but it works when you're not playing Ohio State. It works when you're not playing Michigan State. It works when you're not playing Penn State, even though you have victories against Michigan State and Penn State, but you don't have one against Ohio State. Consistently, you're not going to beat these top 10, top 5 teams.
Like, they beat Wisconsin by 25 last year, and they were a top 15 team.
With the type of offense that you're running. And they just don't – for some reason, Michigan, they get good players, but maybe they don't get enough good players. When they do get them, they just don't pan out.
They're not elite.
Yeah, dude, they're always going to have a solid team.
Yeah.
And, you know
– they remind me of Notre Dame. Is what they are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're Notre Dame. They recruited a very high level, but not elite.
Mm-hmm.
They have a very good fan base, but not elite. They have very good coaches, maybe not elite. Like, they kind of have everything that's really good.
And their facilities are top-notch.
And the facilities are great. And again, lots of history and tradition for both fan bases. Notre Dame is always just going to be a little bit less athletic on a big stage against the Clemson, like the way Michigan is against Ohio State. And, again, we also have to be fair to Jim Harbaugh. Almost all of this is because of one game last year. Through 11 games last year, Michigan was the far superior football team in the Big Ten. Ohio State was giving up boatloads of yards. They were losing. They lost to Purdue by 30. You know, they gave up 40 points to Purdue. Like, through 11 games, Michigan was the far better team. They were one inch away from making the playoff when the JT Barrett gets the first down in overtime on the fourth down in the quarterback sneak. That year, they beat James Franklin and Penn State, who won the Big Ten, by 40 points.
Mm-hmm.
They beat the Big Ten champ by 40 points. He took a 5-win team and won 10. He went to 3 straight NFC championship games. He went to the Super Bowl. This is a good football coach. I think Michigan expects to be Alabama, and that's not a fair. It's like Vanderbilt expecting to be better than they are. I don't think Michigan realizes that it's not a top-5 program.
Look at the schedule they have left. They've got 14th-ranked Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
They're at Penn State, who's number 12. They're home for 10th-ranked Notre Dame.
Yeah.
They get Michigan State, who's 25. Ohio State is 5. So of those 5 games, if they go 3-2, they're looking at another 9-3 type season. If you're in that athletic department, yeah, you might not say he's on the hot seat. But, boy, you talk about – I mean, at what point do you win a game – that you're not supposed to win.
Where they're going to have to, because this was the year that they were supposed to beat.
Yeah, they were picked to win the division.
Ohio State.
Yeah.
The way they're playing, they're not going to beat Michigan State. They're not going to beat Ohio State. They might not beat, you know, the Iowa or teams like that, which I don't they're going to have a hard time at, you know, winning games like that.
I mean, Wisconsin is Iowa.
Yeah.
And they just got trounced.
And this coach, I don't think they believe they're Alabama. I think they want to be Ohio State. And they're not Ohio State.
And
they don't have the athletes that Ohio State.
And what's crazier is they've never been Ohio State.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Ohio State's always been the best.
That's their that's the barometer. That's the mark where if we can be Ohio State and we can beat them consistently, then we are the one of the top four or five teams. But they haven't been able to beat them.
You nailed it. Why they haven't moved into the 21st century is they haven't evolved on offense. My biggest issue with Jim Harbaugh is his effort to change that this year was to hire, and again, Vanderbilt fans know all about Josh Gattis. He was a wide receivers coach here under James Franklin. He went and coached with him under Penn State. Then he was out of Alabama. So you look at the resume, you go, oh, that looks good. But he hired Josh Gattis to be his offensive coordinator this year in a critical season where he needed big wins, and he decided to, you know, evolve the offense with Josh Gattis, a guy who had never stepped foot on campus and had never called a play. That is a risky maneuver, and he did that, and I think it's a bad move. It clearly hasn't worked. That is the biggest criticism to me of Jim Harbaugh, is he has not evolved his offense, and when he did so in a really sort of dumb way. I'm not saying Josh Gattis won't eventually be a good coordinator, but you're not going to fix all your things, your issues overnight by hiring a guy who's never called a play and has never stepped foot on your campus, so he doesn't know your personnel. I just don't, like, to me, that was a terrible decision. You know, Coach O brought in Joe Brady from the Saints, and then he said, go do it, man. And he already had Joe Burrow in place. Shea Patterson's regressed. He's not as good as he was last year through three games. We'll find out some more, four games, whatever. We'll find out some more as the season goes along. As you read out the schedule, Nick, they got a lot of challenges. There's a lot of these teams we're going to learn about because a lot of these teams still have a lot of big games left on their schedule, and Michigan's one of them.
Big Finish coming up in just about 17 minutes. We're back after this on a Tuesday on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, this will get you going. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Big Finish coming up at 9:45 this morning.
You know who that is?
Not a damn clue, but I like it.
It's Drake.
Is that old Drake or new Drake?
New Drake.
I think Drake's a
pick. Technically. You can say new Drake, like a couple years.
Yeah. He hadn't really. Yeah, that's like oldish, newish, however you want to call it. Whatever you want to call it. Ish. Okay. It's just ish.
I think he's a pain in the ass.
Why?
I think he's annoying.
Just
but
the whole Raptor thing. It's just sit down.
He is annoying.
Him,
but
Jack Nicholson. I'm tired of all the celebrities just annoying people.
Well, Jack Nicholson doesn't do
exactly
anything.
Jack,
but he's got the sunglasses on. You know he's blazed out of his brain. It's just
man. Jack just sits on a sideline and doesn't say anything.
Just make another movie.
He's just got that weird shining look on his face with his legs crossed. Just
his arms crossed. Like,
looks like Phil Jackson out
there. Man, he's just cheering on his Laker team.
You don't know if he's watching Nick Van Exel or Smush Parker.
You know what he doesn't do? He doesn't get up and hug the head coach of the Lakers in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
How about that? Isn't that what Drake did? He went up and like gave a big hug to the
Yeah, and if any coach needs a hug, it's Laker coaches. So, I mean, that would have been perfect.
I'm just saying, if I did that, a regular fan did that, I'd get kicked out of the building.
So
that kind of upsets me when I watch a celebrity get treated like that.
You pay about $30,000 for courtside seats. There are things you can get away with.
Not touching the athletes and coaches, though. I don't care how rich you are. You can't. Right. Drake gets special treatment because he's a musician. Yeah. I think he's got some ownership of the team.
Yeah, he does. He actually designed the uniforms. Yeah. They're alternate uniforms.
Listen, you can give them high five. What you can't do is push them and pour stuff on them. What you can do is give them high fives.
Give them a little shoulder rub.
And hugs. You can do that. They don't care about that, but just don't push and pour stuff on them.
The only guy I've never grown tired of as far as super fans that are celebrities is Spike.
Like when Spike is the most annoying
when
one.
When he used to do the choking thing to Reggie Miller as Knicks fan.
Love Spike.
No, it was vice versa.
Reggie did that to Spike. Thanks for bringing up all the terrible childhood memories I have.
But people love Spike, man.
I love Spike.
As a Knicks fan, I love Spike. But even as a Knicks fan, I think it gets a little annoying the amount of just involvement there. Like
every Knicks fan should be like Spike. Maybe they'll win.
James Dolan will kick us all out of Madison Square Garden if we act like that.
Shoot, he ain't kicking Spike out. That's one thing.
He's the only
kick
one.
Him out.
They kick Charles Oakley out.
They won't kick out Spike Lee.
No, they know.
One quick thing we're going to get to in a moment is related to the Preds. We'll do that in a second. But speaking of things I'm getting tired of, Monday Night Football last night, we made the comparison with the Bears and the Titans to start the show as we talked about the game. One thing we didn't mention, though, it's over for Case Keenum. I mean, if I'm the Redskins at this point, you just got to throw out Dwayne Haskins, don't you already? I mean, you're 0-3.
Well, you can't now because the head coach has said, no, Case Keenum's our guy.
Well, and I mean, the Giants moved on from Eli.
No, but the head coach didn't come out and say, hey, listen, Eli's our guy 1 week, and then the next week, Eli's not starting. He's already said, even after the game, Case Keenum is the guy. And then you can't come back the next day and say, well, Haskins starting.
I don't know. There's no loyalty in this world. If he has one more bad game, that whole
I'm not saying that he can't make the change after this game, but I think this game you got to stick with Case Keenum. If I'm Haskins, I'm like, thank God I didn't go out there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's like, whoo! I'm glad I didn't go out.
Especially
have no
Bears.
Parts of that.
I wonder if you're Dwayne Haskins, if you wouldn't rather sort of play garbage time the whole year. Like,
would
I know you. Everybody
rather
every,
play garbage time.
Would you rather be a starting quarterback and get decapitated every week, or be a backup quarterback and have both your legs intact? I do think it's an interesting equation. If you're Dwayne Haskins, would you rather go out there and get just demolished a lot, or would you rather sit and wait your turn like Patrick Mahomes, get help, you know, learn the NFL game, get a lot of reps under your belt, practice a lot, become a professional? Because Dwayne Haskins didn't start a lot of games in college, he only started 1 year. And so maybe there's an advantage there to just slow playing Dwayne Haskins for a while, who's clearly got a great arm. I mean, he can clearly sling it. So the Giants don't really have a choice. You know, they had to move on from Eli, and Daniel Jones was taken much higher. Maybe the Redskins are in the same boat. I don't know. That's a tough call.
All right, today, the Predators practice coming up around 11 o'clock today. You and I will be going out there for a little bit, things you're trying to observe and see.
Yeah, a lot of the drama around the roster for the Preds was removed when, you know, Jeremy Davies was assigned to the AHL, Rem Pitlick, Ellie Tolvanen, the kind of the higher-end prospects were assigned to the AHL. That sort of took some of the drama out. I do think there is some drama to watch, in particular the last forward or defenseman spot on the roster is interesting. There's some guys fighting for those spots. Daniel Carr, Freddie Goudreau, and Mika Salamaki are probably the last three forwards currently on the roster, and they're probably fighting for two spots. We know the coaching staff loves Mika Salamaki, and Daniel Carr would be claimed off of waivers probably pretty quickly if you put him in there and dropped him down a level. By the way, if David Poile's spending all offseason telling us how offensively focused he is on building this team, how do you take the guy who was the MVP of the AHL last year off the roster? I think Daniel Carr is one of the most intriguing names that we've talked about all summer that today I want to go see at practice and see what he looks like. I'd like to see him make a roster. I would assume he would. And then, of course, the defenseman situation, you probably have Matt Irwin, Steven Santini, and Jared Tenorti fighting for one spot. Mm-hmm. Probably Irwin. Maybe you carry an eighth defenseman. Who knows what their strategy is there. But there's only a couple of roster. Again, we've all camp, we've talked about this. There's not a lot of spots on the big club available, and a lot of those young players are going to be needed at some point during the year. So you send them down, you let them work every night in the AHL for the Admirals, and then you bring them back when you need them. But I think Daniel Carr is the one name I'm looking at. Like, hey, I'd like to go see how he fits in. You know, the lines, I don't really care. Like, Kyle Turse is playing on the first line as a winger. That's not an indicator of where he's actually going to play necessarily. So I'm kind of taking the lines and the lineups with a grain of salt.
Our buddy Robbie Stanley tweeted this out a couple of hours ago from NHL.com. As far as the Preds roster moves are concerned, I understand the value of the two-way contract and how that plays into all of this. Having said that, Pitlick has outperformed Goudreau and Salamaki in camp. You can make the argument for Tolvanen as well. He thinks both Tolvanen and Pitlick will be up at some point this season, so it's not a huge deal, but he does think Pitlick deserved to make the team out of camp.
I think he's right about that, but you have to look at it from a business standpoint, and if one guy doesn't have any waivers left and can be claimed by another team and another guy doesn't, you got to try to keep as many players in your control as possible, right? Mm-hmm. I think Freddie Goudreau is the guy who gets cut here and gets put on waivers and maybe gets claimed. He's a fan favorite because he's like the nicest guy in the locker room, in a locker room full of nice guys. But Freddie Hockey is, you know, he kind of captured the hearts and minds during the Stanley Cup run. He's never really developed into more than just a bench player. He's a great guy, and I wish him the best, but it feels like Freddie Goudreau is the guy who's out on this particular roster.
Do you see the putting Kyle Turse on the first line as a way of trying to get him going and giving him every opportunity to show that, hey, last season was not the norm for him? So we're going to give him every opportunity to input, because ultimately that's what a coach is supposed to do. Put a guy in a position to succeed, and maybe put him on the first line, gives him an opportunity to succeed. And now if you do choose to make a move with him, you can say, hey, listen, we've given him every opportunity to show that last season was just not the norm in regards to him.
Yeah, and line changes are, you guys know this, it's sort of like an offensive line in football or a receiving core where you're going to change it up throughout the course of the year anyway. It's not going to be a standardized thing. You'll find the rotation you want, hopefully, by the last 20 or 30 games, and then you kind of settle into that. But we've seen Lavi do this before. He mixes it all up. Turris has played wing. I think that is an important development. The fact that he's asked to be a center right now. He's being asked to be a winger, which means shoot the puck, dude. And he's got a really good shot. So are you, again, like you said, Derek, are you putting Kyle Turris in the best situation to succeed if you're playing alongside Johansson and Forsberg or Johansson and Arvidsson on the top line? You're in a better situation potentially to succeed. If you're on a second line with Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund, I still have questions about that line's physical toughness, but I think that's a collection of really skilled offensive weapons, and they should be able to generate lots of high-danger chances. So the idea is to play Kyle Turris on the wing to allow him to shoot the puck a little bit more, use his strengths. Does that work? That also means Craig Smith goes down a line. Now he's playing as a bottom six forward instead of a top six forward. Like, there's just a ripple effect through all of this.
Coming up next, we will wrap it up strong with the Big Finish live here on a Tuesday of Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We've had a big show. And now it's time for a Big Finish on Morning Drive.
That is correct. It's time for the Big Finish. We do it each and every day here at 9:45 on the program. And the Big Finish, as always, Mr. Gall, is brought to you by
Nashville Soccer Club. Nashville SC, of course, is the website where you can get tickets to the inaugural season of MLS Soccer coming up next year. So NashvilleSC.com is the website. Nashville Soccer Club.
Hollywood.
In the playoffs, by the way.
Why don't you take that and rewind it back? And we welcome you into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in live here on a Tuesday.
I'm looking at the guy that said, I caught the babies and I'm like Nelson Aguilar. I know he was kind of making light of, but that's Philly fans, man. Even amidst a situation where you were being a hero, you know, you're saving lives, kissing babies.
Gotta take a shot.
And then at the end, you take a shot at your local team.
You know, here's what I do, though. If I was Nelson Aguilar, put on a smile, bring the family to the stadium, hand them the tickets, take pictures, and then I grab the guy to the side and be like, yo, homes, you ever do that again to be on national TV? Just saying.
I'm going to give you a Philly special.
We've got the best producer in Nashville radio, Marquise.
Yes.
Don't tell me he doesn't make the rest of us better because he's here. Right? Like, he doesn't put the words in your mouth when you speak, D-Base, but him being on the team...
Him being on ones and twos?
I know you're trying to sandbag him right now, but him being on the team... Like, again, anytime you're on a team, whether it's in business or in life, like, it doesn't matter. If you're surrounded by really talented, good people at what they do, it should make everyone's job easier. Having the best left tackle in football next to you should make your job easier. Like, just by definition, it should make your job easier. So... Again, having the best producer in Nashville Sports Talk Radio, I think makes all of our jobs a little easier.
Yeah.
You hear me, Marquise?
No, I hear you loud and clear.
Come on, dog.
I appreciate it, man. I'm not going to let you, stroke my ego, but
why,
I appreciate you.
Nah, you know you loved that.
I did. I ain't going to lie.
I mean, I disagree with the statement. But.
I mean, personally, you're entitled to your opinion. It's
does
all good.
That make the rewind check?
We welcome in our resident general manager, Floyd Reese.
You know, the bottom line is he will help. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Given that, Kelly has not been bad. The whole problem has been on the right side there. And the struggles that we've had, especially this last week with Campbell lining up there and, him becoming a problem. And what do you do about that? I don't know. Because really, on paper, if you look at it, your best five linemen right now include Kelly. But what do you do with them?
Kind of an interesting debate just broke out here during the commercial, because we don't just debate sports on this show. We debate life and entertainment.
hummus and fresh, authentic pita bread.
Yeah, like real, warm, the real stuff.
Out of the oven, straight out of the oven, or chips and queso. Or chips and salsa.
If you're giving me a salsa and a queso where I can dip into both of them and I can get that chip covered in salsa and queso, that's hard to beat. But the fresh pita right out of like a brick fire oven with like the little char on it. Oh my God.
See, if you give me the guacamole, I would put that over queso and salsa.
Really?
I think guacamole is a bigger threat to the existence of hummus than queso and salsa.
You think so?
Why do you think that?
It's just great.
I'm not a guac person, unless it's money.
It's very odd that you're not a guac fan. Somebody who likes all the healthy
foods. Wait, unless
stuff.
It's money? What does that mean?
It's just... Yeah, he's just...
I like how you turn to me. He's like, they just don't understand.
No, hey, don't put me in there. I knew what he was talking about.
I didn't say you. Yeah. Nick just showed his whiteness. All right.
Don't
guac
put me
is
in
money.
There.
We just said
okay.
Money. Green.
I never heard that one.
I mean, yeah, anything.
No.
Do you mean like cheddar?
Yeah, you know.
I've heard
that.
Cheddar.
I'm carrying
cheese.
I'm carrying that cheddar.
Cheddar. Nick.
Nick.
Not as cash, no.
It's cheddar.
Not cheddar.
Okay.
Cheddar is cheese. Right. It's cheddar.
You got to start adding A's to these things.
Can you use any dairy product to describe money? Like, oh, man, I'm walking around with lots of sour cream in my pocket. Like, can you do that?
Not really. That sounds too long. No. Sour cream too long.
Okay. Have I temporarily lost my honorary brother card?
Yes.
Welcome in our buddy Wes Rucker from GoBalls 24/7.
I don't think they're going to make a move this year. I just don't think they're in a financial position to do that, and I don't think that's the right thing to do. In fact, I think it would be kind of crazy, and I think they know that because they don't want to pay three head coaches at the same time. So they have to kind of give this guy a chance to start building this thing, or else they're just kind of doing the same things they've done over and over and over and over again for the past 12 years, and that's kind of nowhere. So they're going to have to just kind of get a stiff upper lip and deal with this, but you're right. I mean, if it's a 3-9, you know, 2-10, something like that, it's going to be a pretty nasty offseason around here.
Chad Bishop, who covers Vanderbilt for 24/7 Sports.
Play some winnable games on the schedule with what we've seen out of the SEC East, with a lot of the quarterback issues around the league. And Vanderbilt, you know, they've been pretty okay from the injury front, and they've been pretty okay from the offensive front. If they can shore up some things defensively, there's no doubt that they can make a run. But I think now fans are really going to raise their eyebrows and say, all right, time to back up the talk and walk that walk and get some of these victories.
Derek Mason and Jeremy Pruitt, Thanksgiving weekend competing for win number 4.
Yeah, but I look
throughout
at...
Throw out the record.
Yeah.
Literally.
I look at...
That's a game you're going to have to watch intoxicated.
Yeah.
I'm just going to be honest. You can't watch that game sober.
I think Jefferson is the best prospect in the group. Marshall's really good. Chase is kind of like the third option, but he had the huge game against Vandy.
Well, Chase is the third option coming up at 10 o'clock as well. You know what I'm saying?
No, I got it. That's
Darren Donick Chase.
I'm laughing.
Sorry about that. Sorry to derail your train of thought.
No, that was so good that it was a wreck. The whole train is off the tracks now, completely destroyed.
All right, man, it's not looking good for the hummus homies out here.
The hummus homies.
The hummus homies.
Could be a fantasy team name next year.
So I asked, better combo, hummus with the pita bread or chips and queso? And you probably shouldn't have tweeted this out on Taco Tuesday, 89% chips and queso.
I think you're setting yourself up for failure, hummus crowd, with that kind of question. I think if you add,
they don't know.
I'm just saying that
they don't know.
Our audience is
don't
gonna,
show or care what's going on in the hummus.
Ain't no river wide enough to keep me from getting to you, baby.
Don't hurt the real journalism world. It's jackasses like you that cause problems, okay? They shouldn't even let you call in.
I understand there's 40,000 experts on Twitter that can call plays for me, so my email address is #IDon'tCare.
And that was the Morning Drive Daily Rewind, #WeDon'tCare.
We don't care.
A lot of angry coaches in this world today, man.
I think coaches are just fed up now.
I don't care about you rich babies making millions of dollars having to answer questions. Oh, your life is so hard. You make $9 million to answer some questions from some people making 40 grand a year. I don't care. Get over it. Answer your stupid questions, you big babies.
Hey,
shut
man,
up and coach football.
We all pick our profession. So some professionals are more lucrative than others. And, you know, they're just tired of some of the questions that are being asked. And hey, you get to a point where you're like, #I don't care.
Yeah, but I just feel so bad for the millionaires.
I mean, I don't feel bad for
them.
I get it.
If you were a head coach, Derek Mason, would you take the Belichick approach and say nothing, or would you be like Gundy and get snippy and get real sarcastic?
I think it'd be both ways.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think sometimes I wouldn't say nothing. Sometimes I'd be snarky, but then sometimes I'd ask the question. And like D'Antonio, I answer those good questions. Keep them coming. I answer them.
I think it's different in college where you can be like, you're like the most powerful person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the NFL, you've got, you know, league standards and obligations and media partnerships you have to deal with. Mike Gundy is the most powerful guy in the room. Like, we saw that when he was covering up stuff in summer camp this summer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I like what said after the Bill Belichick whole interview. The female, what's her
name? Dana Jacobson.
Yeah, Dana Jacobson. I love what she said. Listen, she said, basically, I asked the question I was supposed to ask, and he answered it the way he was supposed to answer it, the way he wanted to answer it. I have no problem with it. I'm moving on. I'm getting married this weekend. I'm moving on to my wedding. She didn't take any offense to it.
No.
It just didn't seem like a big deal on either
side. She knew she had to ask the question, and she knew what type of response she was going to get back. But everyone else made it this huge thing, and she was like, listen, I knew more than likely I was going to get nothing out of him, but I had to ask the question. And I did, and he gave me the stare and walked away. I'm fine with it. I've moved on. All of y'all are the ones that are offended. I'm not.
This strikes me as like the PC police here getting a little worked up over something that's not really that big of a deal. Like, so a coach looked at you mean. Okay. You did your job. You asked a tough question. You don't care about it. And this is one of those where I think the rule should be this. You cannot be more offended than the victim in this situation. Right,
and we don't operate that way.
I'm using victim in a very loose term here.
We don't operate that way.
She's the one it happened to. If she's not upset, no one else is allowed to get upset. Period. Like, that's the way I look at it. If somebody says something mean to you, Nick, or you, Derek, and you're not really upset about it, then I ain't going to get upset about it.
Here's the thing that I think what happens, especially with television individuals, and when it has to do with the woman, say in this situation, because it wasn't that egregious, when a woman says, I'm offended by it, and it's not the person that should be offended, but if it's three of us and one of you guys is a woman and she says, I'm offended, then it's almost like the man feel he has to say, well, I'm offended too. No, tell how you really feel. You didn't think that was a situation where you should have been offended. She has every right to feel offended, but me as a man, I shouldn't have to agree with you just because you're a woman.
All right, that's going to do it for us here on a Tuesday edition of the show. Stay tuned for Darren, Donick, and Chase. They are broadcasting live today from Centennial Sportsplex for Preds practice. According to the Constable, they plan to have Peter LaViolette stop by the show, as well as some players. So stay tuned. A little double dip action coming on a Tuesday on the road. We'll see you tomorrow. Morning Drive.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, you know I love you.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.